You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome, citizens, to this day in history with Benjamin J. Goldson.
Yes, this day in history, going back to 1993 for the end of the Russian constitutional crisis. This was when the Russian parliament sort of revolted against President Yeltsin over his economic reforms that had taken place in the aftermath of the breakup of the Soviet Union.
Mikhail Gorbachev's dreams of holding the Soviet Union together may have received a death blow today. The Union's three Slavic republics announced they are forming a separate Commonwealth of Independent States. Russia, the Ukraine, and Belarus control much of the Soviet Union's economic power, enough to challenge the rapidly fading strength of Gorbachev's central government. Details from Moscow correspondent John Donvan.
The chief state TV channel was halfway through its evening news when it got the first details of the agreement signed in Minsk. Quoting from it, the anchorwoman announced, "The Soviet Union, as a subject of international and geopolitical reality, no longer exists." That decision, whether it sticks or not, was made in one weekend by three men. Boris Yeltsin, President of the Republic of Russia, Leonid Kravchuk, just elected President of the Ukraine, and Stanislav Shushkevich, leader of the Soviet republic known as Belarusia, which is where they all came together to meet. The territory of their commonwealth, as they declared it, now accounts for 70% of the present Soviet population and much of its oil and food. Open to other former republics to join, it will be headquartered not in Moscow, but in the Belarusian capital, Minsk, snubbing not only Moscow, but also Soviet President Mikhail Gorbachev and the strong central power he once stood for. Tonight, Gorbachev was on Ukrainian television, still arguing for a Moscow-based central government linking the parts of the old Soviet Union. Otherwise, he predicts anarchy, chaos, or as his supporters say,
it's going to be an economic disaster of incredible proportions for the Soviet republics to go their own way.
But Yeltsin and his Commonwealth colleagues say they know what they're doing, already signing agreements this weekend on nuclear weapons, which they say they will jointly control. The TASS news agency says they have agreed to cooperate on military and foreign affairs in general. All of which seems to put Gorbachev out of a job and a new government into gear. But it's not that simple. Some of the remaining Soviet republics prefer Gorbachev and his ideas to the new Commonwealth, whose members already have disagreements on how quickly to change to a free market system, for example, and on whether to destroy the nuclear weapons on their soil or keep them. John Donvan, ABC News, Moscow.
But Gorbachev would be soon removed from his job after being briefly detained by the military. Bloody cold. Like Russia, in fact.
Sorry.
Mingling with the rush hour traffic, Red Army armored personnel carriers on the streets of Moscow this morning, heading to the Kremlin. They first moved in at 4 a.m., the first sign of the coup d'etat that removed Mikhail Gorbachev from power. With tanks in Red Square, the official word from the new government, calling itself the National Emergency Committee, was that the architect of glasnost and perestroika was too ill to continue in office. A short statement reminiscent of the Soviet Union's past was broadcast by state television. By mid-morning, APCs were ringing the Defense Ministry and most government buildings. From many people on the streets, the reaction was one of sheer surprise and resignation. Others pinned their hopes on non-communist politicians to come to the nation's aid. Tanks were also positioned outside the Russian parliament building, Boris Yeltsin's headquarters. The democratically elected president of Russia was soon striding out of the building to address a crowd of supporters. His own radio and television stations by now occupied and forced off the air, he climbed aboard one of the Red Army's own tanks and said the coup leaders had disgraced the Soviet Union. Tonight, tanks are still in position around the Kremlin, the new leaders installed inside. Former President Mikhail Gorbachev believed to be at his summer home on the Black Sea, unseen and unheard by the Soviet people today. Tomorrow, Gorbachev was due to preside over the signing ceremony for the new Treaty of Union, the document that would have changed the face of the Soviet Union by giving more power to the republics and less to the center. The signing ceremony has been cancelled. With opposition parties and public demonstrations banned, those who have spent the last 6 years trying to bring democracy to the Soviet Union will now have to break the law to spread their ideas. For World Monitor, I'm Simon Marks in Moscow.
That was part one of This Day in History. Part two will be right back after a quick break. But for now, here is Undertow, the Javelin Mix by Warpaint.
Your brown eyes are my blue sky.
Freddy's Drop with special guests Unknown Water Orchestra. Also joined by Norman J. MBE, Lady Six, Troy Kingy, Silver MC and The Log Cabin. An absolutely unmissable lineup. Fat Freddy's Drop with special guests Unknown Water Orchestra. Saturday, January 19th at Western Springs Park. This will sell out. Get your tickets now from Ticketmaster.
How do I keep on the cutting edge of great new music?
Well, when a DJ loves a record very, very much, they do a special kind of cuddle.
Never mind, I've sorted it out.
the answer to your problems. Follow 95BFM on Spotify for a lovingly curated collection of what's new, what's hot, and what's good in music. September features Bella Boo, Terza, Tiny Ruins, Ross from Friends, and more. 95BFM's monthly Spotify playlist. Stay au fait.
Yes, so we now return to this day in history. When we left off, Boris Yeltsin had secured control of Russia in the aftermath of the collapse of the Soviet Union. Yeltsin had then embarked on a series of quite sort of radical market reforms, privatizing a lot of things, which he just got snapped up by these oligarchs, which had gotten quite unpopular by 93, so you had a lot of demonstrations against that. Meanwhile, Yeltsin was also feuding with members of the Russian parliament for the same reason, who eventually staged a sort of uprising, which was quickly quelled, though, by Yeltsin taking advantage of the country's military.
Former parliament chairman Ruslan Khovatbulatov and the former vice president Alexander Rutskoy surrendered following the 10-hour attack on the Russian White House that reportedly killed dozens of people. CNN's Christiane Amanpour is in Moscow and joins us with the latest. Good morning, Christiane.
Good morning to you, Susan. Indeed, the violent showdown is now all but over, but the shooting has not completely stopped. We've heard reports tonight of a gun battle outside the Itar Tass news agency. Itar Tass reports that one person was killed in that battle. We've also heard from the Interior Ministry that some 200 rebels that were inside the White House, inside the Parliament building, may have fled with their weapons and are holed up somewhere in the center of Moscow. We've heard quite a lot of sporadic firing and shooting despite the 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. curfew. We're told that those troops may be holed up, as I say, firing, trying to flee out of the city and into the hinterlands. The death toll from today's violence is not yet known. It could go higher than expected. Once people go into the White House tomorrow and find out the extent of the damage and find out more bodies may be in there. As you see now from our live picture, the building is still burning some 24 hours after the assault was launched. Flames are spreading, the fire is spreading in all directions. We get more now on the details of this extraordinary day from CNN's Walter Rogers.
The Russian parliament burning, set on fire as the Russian army was called to suppress an armed revolt led by hardline opponents trying to overthrow President Boris Yeltsin. A T-80 tank fires another 125-millimeter shell point blank into the building where several hundred anti-Yeltsin rebels made their last stand. There was war on the streets of Moscow as small arms fire rattled throughout the city. Anyone near the parliament building was in a free fire zone, and there were heavy casualties inside and outside of the building. Snipers on the roof of parliament sent many scurrying. And some gunmen found their targets. This man crawls to the aid of a friend, felled by the heavy sniper fire. During periodic lulls in the fighting, a makeshift morgue was arranged on a sidewalk. A total casualty count may not be known for days. Slowly, groups from inside the parliament surrendered, and little mercy was shown after the worst civil strife Russia has seen since the Bolshevik Revolution. Police who went over to the rebels when they believed the tide was shifting against President Yeltsin were treated with contempt. In his address to the nation, Russia's president vowed to crush those like Vice President Alexander Rutskoy, who he holds responsible for the revolt.
They and those who were giving orders to them will never be forgiven because they have put in jeopardy their own people, Moscow, Russia.
Yeltsin was clearly talking about the hardline leader of the rebels, former Vice President Rutskoy, who Sunday called on a mob to storm the television center at Ostankino. Sunday night, that anti-Yeltsin mob, including communists, Russian nationalists, and discontents, stormed the TV center, provoking a ferocious battle that claimed at least 20 lives before the TV building was safely back in government hands. The loyalty of the Russian army, and specifically Defense Minister Pavel Grachev, has been Mr. Yeltsin's trump card throughout this crisis. Without army support, this country could have been sunk into another horrible civil war. 24 hours after their call to revolution, Russia's hardliners carrying a white flag emerged from the parliament they earlier vowed to defend to the last shot. Russian television showed these pictures of former Vice President Rutskoy and Parliamentary Speaker Khasbulatov, leaders of the revolution, under arrest. But their incarceration has not silenced the guns. At dusk, tracer fire still lit up the Moscow sky, and pockets of snipers vented their lethal anger on passing cars, pedestrians, as well as the army still patrolling the streets. Walter Rogers, CNN, Moscow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.